We've spent some time this week revealing for you the many ways that your data is being gathered, stored, bought, bundled up, sold, the ways you can be manipulated as a result, all revealed in our series called Privacy Unravelled by our reporter Flint Duxfield. You can find the series at our website, search ABC Privacy Unravelled. From the big social media companies to government reliance to on your data to data brokers and the growing presences of surveillance cameras and microphones, our privacy has never been more threatened. Well, today, what can we do about these multiple and growing intrusions on our personal and private information and data? Two experts in the field for you, Malcolm Crompton, a former Australian Privacy Commissioner and co-founder of Information Integrity Solutions, and Dr. Soulette Dreyfus, an expert in computer security and hacking and digital privacy and anonymity at the University of Melbourne. They joined me earlier. Malcolm Crompton, welcome to you, and Soulette Dreyfus, thank you for coming along as well today.
Hello.
Thank you.
What can we as individuals do right now, today, that might help protect us from the kind of data intrusion that Flint has explained for us in this program this week? Soulette, if I can start with you.
It's difficult because there are some things you can do, but there's an awful lot of passive slurping up of your data that you can't control. So the Electronic Frontier Foundation is a not-for-profit organization. They have a small program called Privacy Badger that you can attach to your browser, which automatically learns to block invisible trackers on web browsers. It's a help. It's not a full solution. You can also use Signal, which is an app for your mobile phone. It's free and it gives you end-to-end encrypted communication. But security is really a process. It's not just one thing that you buy. And as such, it's something you actually have to do in a holistic sense. So there's not a lot of easy solutions. You can also change, obviously, the settings on Facebook and your other online accounts, Google, to reduce the amount of information you permission giving away. But consumers are often in a situation where they are forced to give consent, what we call forced consent, or they have no knowledge that the information is being taken. So there's no consent and there's not much you can do to protect against that.
Malcolm, what would you add to that, if anything? And I guess one of the observations I'd like to make is that it seems to me that you have to be reasonably well off, reasonably determined, and have pretty good know-how to do a lot of those things.
There's a few other things at a technical level that you can do, like use a VPN, virtual private network, but don't ever use a free VPN because the free is paid for by some other mechanism, and unfortunately that includes them sneakily selling off information about you. So buy a virtual private network to put all your stuff through. That helps to protect you from government as well as from other sorts of snooping. Another thing I like doing is setting traps. Because I own a whole domain, and it's actually very cheap to own a whole domain, I can make up email addresses on the spot so long as I use the same domain. And the domain bit is the bit after the at. And if that email address is ever abused, you know exactly where it came from. And one of the real problems, I think, that we've all alluded to is that there's so much you can do to protect yourself that most people end up not being able to. You should go to all of the apps on all of your devices and turn off location, unless you really want to display location. You should go to all of the apps on all of your devices and turn off background refresh, unless you really want it to happen. But the naughty thing, and it's even the same in government applications, including the My Health Record, the defaults are set to open and share with everybody until you actively go in there and close them down. And that's the naughty bit in all of these processes.
So let's go to that and to that other issue that you raised, Soulette, about privacy policies, the fact that we sort of have no choice but to consent. Do governments need to legislate to change those practices if we are to have any chance of protecting our privacy?
They do. They do need to legislate because there is a industry that's been a pretty hard to penetrate world of data mining. So data collection and merging and massaging and selling and matching with other databases. And right now, if I have information that is controlled by one of these data miners, I don't have as of right the ability to say legally, you must show me everything that you have about me touching on me or whatever, everything that you've sold about me. And if you've made an error, you must correct it, not just in your own records, but to the whole chain of people who you've passed it down. So it fundamentally comes to the question of, do I own this data about myself? Or is it data that's been traded like a commodity? I don't control it. I can't really correct it. I mean, there are ways you can ask for it to correct it, but often what's shown to consumers is only the tip of the iceberg. That is, I think, one of the biggest problems about this. And that really leads to the creepy line we've all been talking about. It's no longer just about trying to persuade someone the way that traditional marketing is. It's actually in the realm of trying to manipulate someone. And I think that's what the yuck factor is.
Mm. Malcolm, the European Union has its general data protection legislation. It's been much touted. Is it effective? Is it an option for Australia?
Much touted. That's exactly right. The issue actually in Europe and Australia isn't about changing the law. The actual issue is its enforcement. The Privacy Commissioner is woefully underfunded.
And I guess the other issue is the government is very much in on this game, not just collecting our data at a furious rate, but algorithmically sorting it. We had robo-debt as a result. I mean, regulation by the government, well, it's the fox in charge of the hen house, isn't it, Soulette?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, robo-debt is an incredible example of people's personal information was, they were not just being assaulted by these letters, having their income cut off, but rather this information was being passed on to private debt collectors who then, you know, had very menacing approaches to people. And that was all authorized by the Commonwealth government. You know, so this, as you say, it is exactly this problem. I think that there, you know, are models for how to do it better. Vermont, the state in the U.S., has recently passed a new data privacy law, and it's a little bit more symbolic than perfectly functioning, but it does require data brokers to annually register in the state. They have to disclose whether the consumer may opt out of data collection, retention, or sale, and how they do it. So that's often a missing component, how you do it if you're the consumer. It has a duty to secure the data. It can't fraudulently collect the data. There are a set of things about this law that's really quite progressive, and it's the first law that is as far-reaching as it is that's come out of the U.S. So I think there are places that we can learn from if there's the political backbone to do it in Australia. The one thing I think that the Morrison government needs to consider is there's a lot of kind of community anger about not just having private information slurped from your Facebook account or other things and on sold, but the fact that we were lied to about it. You know, the fact that it was done in this sort of sneaky, surreptitious way has really pissed people off.
There are many, many threads in Flint's series this week that we could pull out, but I do want to go to this question of facial recognition, friendly little pieces of technology in our houses listening to us all the time, alluring voices attached to them telling us what the weather's going to be like, but actually a great way to scrape data on us. Malcolm, how dark do you think the future is going to be with cameras and microphones listening to us everywhere?
I wouldn't install one of those things in my house in a fit at the moment. It's simple as that. Even if it says it's off, it has to actually be on in order to turn itself on, if you want to try and work your way through that bit of Kafka-esque logic. So it's actually listening all the time. And there's evidence that, in fact, there's a lot more listening going on when it's allegedly off than has been said in the advertising material. So there's a bit of truth in advertising, if you like, required. But 20 years ago now, the phone marketing industry was way out of control in a lot of countries, the US, Australia, and other places. And the industry had been told to clean up its act or it would get itself regulated. The industry did nowhere near enough about it and got itself regulated. But the point was, by the time the lawmakers got around to making that law, their constituents were screaming at them to fix up the phone marketing industry that was just ruining everybody's evenings at the time. We haven't reached that point yet, but government will be reluctant to act on a lot of this until the politicians, the ordinary backbencher, hearing very loudly from the constituents, this is unacceptable. So in fact, it's actually going to take a lot of noise from the everyday person getting hold of their Member of Parliament, state and federal, and simply saying this is not good enough and we want more. There's a lot more solution possible. And you can even analogise back over to the Banking Royal Commission. Everything was supposed to be sweet. There were good regulators in place with the banks, nothing to see here, except that the public knew that that wasn't the case. And eventually there were a few politicians who just wouldn't let go until we got a Banking Royal Commission and we found out how unbelievably bad some of the behaviours were in the banks. But it took a public outcry to get to that point. We haven't reached that point yet with data, but I'll tell you what, we're going to get there. It's going to happen.
Can I just add just one thing to that? It was very hard for Vermont to get this law passed. But one of the overriding forces in doing it, besides the public who were just pissed off about it, was actually community organizations who support people who are victims of domestic violence. And that's because their partners access this information by buying it from the data mining companies to chase their victims around. And this government has said, publicly at least, that it is very dedicated to the cause of protecting victims of domestic violence. So one wonders how they will be able to balance this conflict.
Digitally tracking and tracing and attacking people is becoming the mode of choice for a large number of people who are into the business of family abuse. It's absolutely horrific what happens and what can happen. And Sulette is absolutely right that something more can be done about it. And that may be the soft underbelly for when it comes to getting government to pay attention and give it due attention.
Indeed, it might be that thing that wedges them into real action. Malcolm Crompton, thank you very much for joining us today. And Sulette Dreyfus, thank you as well. Very good of you to both join us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Malcolm Crompton is a former Australian Privacy Commissioner, and Dr. Sulette Dreyfus is from the University of Melbourne. And the Privacy Unravelled series is at the PM website. Search ABC PM.